call this meeting to order. Counselor Neal, I think you were making a motion to reconvene tomorrow at this time in Miami, I don't know.
Contemplating not leaving the house this morning.
Counselor Zwart will be with us as soon as she can be. Apparently, her car appreciates the cold weather as much as we appreciate the cold weather. First bit, new business. Counselor Neal, have you got one on staffing?
I don't have a motion myself, but
I think there might be one that. So why don't we put that, or do you want to leave it?
Sure, I wasn't necessarily. I have to absorb this.
Well, you know what? Yeah, next time.
Pardon me?
Next GG is fine.
Okay.
That'll work.
All right. I do have a motion regarding inviting regional transportation staff to come to our next GG.
Can we leave it open just in case they can't make it to the
sure.
GG? Yeah, so yeah. Preferably the GG?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure why I was looking at you first, Councillor Neal, when we were looking at new business.
Sorry, I'm not catching you.
Nothing. It's all
some
good.
Some of these aren't conceived until the wee hours of the morning.
There you go. Councillor Terrell? No? Councillor Anderson? Any new business?
No, none.
Councillor Hooper?
No.
Councillor Jones? None? All right. Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda, please? Councillor Trail, thank you. Seconded by Councillor Hooper. Questions, comments, errors, omissions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All in support? Opposed? That is carried. Do we have any declarations of interest? Councillor Neal.
I believe I have an indirect interest on the neighborhood character study as a result of my law practice.
Okay. This is the neighborhood character study, so the last planning. I guess it's not technically planning. Okay. Anything further? I don't see any. I think, Councillor Jones, you are up on announcements.
No announcements.
Councillor Neal.
No announcements.
Councillor Trail.
No announcements.
Councillor Anderson.
No announcements.
Councillor Hooper.
Oh, sorry, I'm going to have to break trend here. I have a couple. I'd just like to announce that the United Way Catch the Ace raffle will conclude this Friday. That's the one being held here in the municipality, January 25th, with a must-go draw, which means all envelopes will be called until the Ace of Spades is pulled. Last year, tickets were sold out in 2 days with a jackpot well over $4,000. The jackpot is starting at $2,300, and tickets are available up to Friday morning. The must-go draw will commence at 1 p.m. in Room 1C, and good luck to everyone. And if anyone would like to make a donation to the campaign, please do so this week. The current campaign sits at, should I say this, drum roll please, $48,000. So, and I just one other thing I'd like to just briefly talk about is, I know it's passed, but anyways, at our most recent CLOCA meeting, they paid tribute to Councillor Joe Drum, longstanding councillor, regional councillor from Whitby. They dedicated a portion of their Urberdown Trail system called the Joe Drum Trail. And at one point they had a can of Guinness up there as a logo, but they took that off, thought that would be more appropriate if they just... Anyways, I'd just like to say he's the longest serving councillor in the province of Ontario. 41 years he served on the CLOCA board. So just like to wish him best of luck, and that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. And I've just got one piece. Mr. Horvath, if you could thank your guys who have been dealing with some really, really difficult conditions. So it's noted. I think I relayed the message from my wife, who appreciated Sunday morning how much easier Clarington was than other parts of Durham to get around. All right, could I have a motion on the minutes, please? Councillor. Oh, right. So I'll get them on the floor, and then the clerk is going to update us in a tiny piece. So that's Councillor Hooper, seconded by Councillor Anderson. Madam Clerk, there is an issue with the Active Transportation Committee.
Yes, so I just, further to the email that you received on Friday with your update memo, the Durham Active Transportation, not the Clarington one, where we had appointed Councillor Anderson as the regional rep, we got a call from Durham Region staff that they no longer have a rep from every one of the municipalities. They had changed their terms of reference at some point. So they only have the 8 representatives, and then there's a single regional councillor which has already been appointed. So, sorry, Councillor Anderson, but just wanted to make a note. So these minutes today will reflect that.
I'm pretty sure if you want to show up to each and every meeting, they will be delighted to have you there as a guest, because you've got lots of spare time. All right, questions, comments, errors, or omissions on the minutes? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All in support? Opposed? Those are carried. Thank you. We have 3 delegations. The first is Chris Newman, and Chris is going to be talking about youth centers. Chris, welcome. Oh, and you've got backup.
There we go. Oh. So, good morning, Mayor Foster, members of council, members of municipal staff. Thanks so much for having us here today. And I mean, I got to say, it's a good feeling not to have to stand up here by myself today. So backup's always a good thing. I'll just take a sec to introduce them. So we have Principal Ian Cruz from Mother Teresa Catholic Elementary School in Curtis. And one of my good friends that we got to know over the last 4 or 5 months is Tyler, one of our grade 8 students, again, from Mother Teresa as well.
So, Chris, could you try speaking a little bit further back? I'm sorry? Well, it occurs to me that when a couple of people speaking, it seems to be the timbre of the voice. Okay. Okay, so maybe back.
Sure. Is that better there?
I'm getting a nod, yes.
Yeah, okay.
We'll go with that and see how it goes. Our new and improved sound system.
All right, so as most of you know, 2018 and the transition into 2019 has been a, wow, normally I'm not this loud where I have to stand this far back, but so has been obviously a busy year for us at John Howard. I mean, we are tasked in 2018 with opening up a couple of new centers, and I'm super excited to get to kind of speak to one of those locations today, being the Loft in Curtis. Now, before I get into that, I would be I'd be remiss if I didn't take a second to really thank all the municipal staff that we've got to work with, from community services, building operations, as well as customer service. They've definitely made us feel like home at our new locations. And again, the transition wouldn't have gone quite as smoothly and easily without them. So with that being said, we're going to talk a lot about Curtis today, specifically the Loft and what we've seen so far. And I think the first point of mention is that I don't think anybody really could have anticipated the success that has come with this location. I know I don't think, we definitely weren't expecting the numbers that we've seen through the doors already to date. And I think there's a few big pieces to that. One of them has really been the involvement from the community. We've seen unprecedented support from so many different kind of angles. It includes parents who stop by the location and tell us about all the great things that they think we're doing. We've had the opportunity to reach out to several of the local service clubs. And then the schools as well. Again, we've had a very warm welcome, and we've had a lot of really cool opportunities that that have presented themselves quite quickly. We've done a number of collaborative projects already with Mother Teresa. And again, we look forward to kind of building those relationships as we move forward as well. Now, past the community, I mean, really at the end of the day, one of the more important areas of success is going to be from the youth engagement standpoint. And you have a number of further breakdowns in the community services report, but just in terms of our numbers as far as visits go, you'll see up there on the slide that we started out this project anticipating that we'd see somewhere in and around the ballpark of about 1,000 visits over the course of the 6 months. And again, as you can see up there, in just over kind of 4 months of operation, we've well surpassed that. So you see up there that we've had 1,384 visits to the center so far. That's as of last week, and those are all the registered visits. So what that basically means is those are youth who are attached to our program, registered in the system, and signing in. What that number doesn't capture is all those partnership things that I've spoke about already. So that could be trips over to the center, having opportunities to engage with youth in a more structured class kind of environment outside of our regular hours of operation. So if we were to include those in, we would be well over the kind of like 1,500, 1,600 mark at this point in time. And again, we're only kind of at that 4.5 month point of the pilot project. So again, I think if nothing else, those numbers say that it's definitely relevant. It's definitely capturing the interest of local youth in the community. And we feel really strongly that it's only going to continue to grow as we continue to kind of develop those partnerships further moving forward. The other big piece of success for us to pass the numbers, I mean, it's one thing if youth are coming in, it's another thing if they're starting to take ownership over this space. And a big metric for us in terms of measuring that is kind of engagement and programming. So it's where it kind of gets a little bit more fun. So you're going to get to see what a day in the life of the youth center looks like here. So for those of you who were able to join us, this is just a couple of quick shots of our grand opening, which honestly feels like just yesterday, but again is a few months behind us at this point. And then we're going to jump into some of those programming things I talked about. So really one of the goals, I mean, as far as engagement, is to open that safe space where youth can come and they can have a little bit of fun. So that's really what these next few slides are about. If you've come by the center recently, some of these things like the artwork and things like that, you'll have already seen up on the wall and all those sorts of good things. We got a few more. Our toilet paper mummy contest is always a fun one. Our loft banner, which has a lot more names and a lot more interest on it now. And then just a couple other quick photos too. So again, it's definitely been a happening space in the last 4.5 months. And it's been a really cool journey for us, I think, to see the needs, because I think probably very similar to everybody else in the room, we weren't really sure how this was going to go as far as being the pilot project in terms of what the sustainability long-term was. And I mean, from our end, we feel very strongly that these numbers reflect that it's definitely a need in the community and shows that it's taken off, again, probably quicker than we could have expected. I wanted to share this one here in particular as well. So this was on World Kindness Day. A few of the youth from the center thought they'd give a special treat to some of the chilly parents at South Curtis Arena by handing out hot chocolate. And while it sounds kind of like a small little token that we can do to say, hey, we're here, come on, stop by, pay us a visit, it's been really amazing for us to see really the uptake of these youth as far as their interest in giving back already. So, I mean, this was one example. They helped out the one of the local hockey associations get their Christmas donation boxes ready. And the youth have really, again, kind of grasped the center wholeheartedly and really taken an interest in ownership over the space. It's really starting to shape into something more than it was before. If you told me the space was a hockey viewing area only, again, like 5 months ago, it's got a totally new identity and a total new life to it. And a big testament to that is just those youth who are coming through the door and making what we do so exciting and so rewarding every day. And I think to leave you with just a little message from a couple of the youth at the center. They surprised us with this one day as far as a note on our chalkboard. So I'm actually going to turn it over to Tyler now, and he's going to give you a bit of a different perspective on what he thinks of the loft. So, Tyler?
Oh, sure. Sorry, I'm not Tyler. I'm Ian Cruz. I'm the principal at St. Mother Teresa. We planned that Tyler would go after me because I didn't want to be redundant. So thanks for having us here. And Chris, congratulations on what you've done already, and thanks to Your Worship Mr. Foster, and of course Councillor Neal and Councillor Jones for being part of our community and supporting the loft as of date. So one of the things that St. Mother Teresa has been doing as a school in pedagogy is deep learning, and deep learning goes through several different aspects of global competencies that are kind of reflected with the Catholic graduate expectations, and some of those are specifically creativity, communication, critical thinking, citizenship, and collaboration. And so some of our students in both sevens and eights, Mrs. Heward's class, the whole class was scheduled to come here today, but of course when buses are canceled, that means all busing is canceled, so we weren't able to bring the class, which was very unfortunate. Maybe good for you, but it would be a great experience for them to be here this morning. But anyways, we did have a little bus come and bring Mrs. Heward, who's the classroom teacher, and Garrett is in the back watching us as well, so thanks for being here. So the school has really adopted trying to make changes within our community, and one of them that just kind of came up was the loft, and so we really dove in to support the loft and see where our students in our school and beyond. So Tyler and some of his friends have gone to other schools to promote the loft as well on their own accord, and it's been a great successful thing, and they plan on doing that still in the months to come with both the public and Catholic boards in that area. So that's very exciting. The other thing I just wanted to mention is Tyler himself, and I'm just, as when I taught him music only 3 years ago, he's a quiet spoken young man, and I just think that him coming here, and I'm so very proud of him that he's prepared a speech for you all this morning. So it's your turn, Tyler.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Tyler, and I'm here today to talk about the loft and why it's so important to stay open. I, along with a few other people, decided to start a project to get more people to go to the loft. I know from experience that it isn't very fun hanging out outside all day, which is today, which is, you know, minus 40 degrees, so it's not very nice outside. But we want a place that is warm and indoors, but also has the activities that we like. Especially now, as I just mentioned, because it's winter and it's super cold outside, we want a warm place to hang out with our friends that we can feel warm and comfortable in. The loft feels like the best place. It seems to be in the perfect location, and that is super close to everyone that lives in Curtis. It also has a lot of the activities that we like. There aren't very many places like the loft. There are other places that we could go to, but they don't usually like having youth there because we are usually very loud. When you go to the loft, you don't feel like you have to leave because you are loud or because you are having fun. That's what the loft is meant for. You feel like you can hang out and be yourself. The loft is also just a fun place to hang out. They have a lot of activities for everyone. It doesn't matter who you are, they will always have something for you. If you're into sports, they rent the gym a couple times a week. If you are into video games, they have a PlayStation 4. The loft is also just a good place to hang out with your friends because they have all those things, and they're meant for you to use them. You can also go there if you are very shy and maybe don't have a lot of friends, because at the loft, you'll meet someone that has the same taste as you and likes the same things as you. The loft is just a place for everyone. A lot of places don't have a very warm welcome when you walk through the doors. The loft seems to try very hard to make sure that you are welcomed and that you feel like you belong there, because you really do. The loft is meant for youth, unlike a lot of places. For example, when me and my friends go to Tim's or a convenience store, people don't usually like it when kids are hanging out in the parking lot or just wasting time inside. The loft brings kids inside where they know they are welcomed and can be themselves. I assume that you know, kids my age don't tend to be very responsible and do things that they really aren't supposed to do. Well, the loft can help them stay out of trouble by giving them a space that keeps them away from doing bad things and makes sure that they are safe. The loft can also help if a kid isn't having the best time at home, if they are going through something at home, or if things just aren't going very well, or if it just isn't a good place for them to be at the time, they can go to the loft. They can have a good time and clear their head from what might be happening at home. You don't have to just listen to me. I've also asked my classmates for their opinion on the loft. Here are some of the things that they have said. Jaden said, the loft is like a home because the people are welcoming. And Isaac mentioned that kids do bad things and get kicked out of a lot of places, and the loft gives them a fresh start. And Riley talked about how some kids' parents can't afford gaming consoles, and kids like to play video games. All right, I think that's enough talking. Here's a first-person perspective of what a kid might be seeing when going to the loft.
So again, that's just, again, one of those real life looks at the youth center there. So that's all we have as far as the presentation. But again, I just wanted to take a sec to thank Mr. Cruz, Tyler, as well as all the students who worked actually on putting that commercial together for us as well. So we're happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Councillor Anderson.
Congratulations on the job you're doing. It's wonderful. It was long overdue. What's the age requirement? What ages are the kids that usually?
Absolutely. So the programming is tailored for youth ages 12 to 18.
Okay. And is this staffed by volunteers or paid staff? And are the programs structured in any way? Or it's just you come and whatever you like, you take part in?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we do have a combination of volunteers and paid staff. Some of those volunteers could be other community members and adults. Some of them could actually be youth and things like that. The programming itself, for that portion of the question, is a combination of structured and unstructured. So there's enough kind of fluidity built into the schedule where we can be flexible. But as Tyler kind of mentioned as well, there's definitely certain days, for example, Tuesdays, Thursdays, we've got structured gym time every week and things like that. So again, it just provides that kind of formal and informal options for the youth coming through the door.
Good work. Keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Neal.
Through you, Mr. Chair, to Tyler, can I ask you a question?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. So how's the location working?
It seems to be in a very good location. It's at South Curtis Arena, and everyone that I know that lives in Curtis lives generally around South Curtis, so it just seems to be in a good place. And even if you live, like, decently far, it's maximum 20 minutes of a walk. So
that's not a barrier for people going there, the location?
No. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. the other thing is, my understanding, it's open on Saturdays?
What's that?
It's open on Saturdays?
It is, yes.
Okay, and what time is it open, do you know?
It's 12 to 6 on Saturdays.
Oh, okay, not in the morning. Eh?
No. No one's going to be up before 12.
No one's going to be awake? That was my question. Okay, all right. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Jones.
Thank you very much to all of you for coming today. And Chris, congratulations on all the hard work that you did, because that was a very, very short time frame to get that up and running. And I know all the hard work that you put into that, so thank you very much. And all to staff as well, that was it was a very short time frame, and it's fantastic that that got going. I only had one question, because I know that there was some information going around social media about the loft, and I was a little concerned to see that, because I haven't heard this from anyone else around the safety of the loft. And there was also some comments in the survey saying that I think it needs to be safer, and I just wondered if you had any comments. Do you have any concerns about it being safe, and is there anything you can clarify about some of those comments in the survey?
Sure, yeah, and I think great question, because that's one of the things that, I mean, in combination with ourselves, but as well as communications here, that we wanted to be on top of right away as soon as we saw some of those things coming out. And I feel like it's one of those conversations almost like perception versus reality. So we're not aware of any of those concerns. Working closely with staff, they weren't brought to any of their attention as well. And I mean, we work very hard, again, as Tyler mentioned, making it really that safe and that welcoming space as soon as people walk through the door. But what we also try to encourage the community to do in our responses, even directly to some of those specific concerns, was to reach out to us directly and connect with us maybe over the phone if they want to have a greater discussion of what those concerns actually look like. And that never took place. So again, we don't have any concerns around the safety of the space. And again, we welcome kind of the community to bring those questions or those concerns forward, because again, that's a big kind of component of making it exactly what it's supposed to be.
And there is always a paid staff person there for safety reasons as well.
Absolutely, we actually always have two paid staff. That was again one of the great things about the model for this location that we were also able to mirror in Newcastle, is that we're able to have two paid staff on, which again goes a long way, not only again to ensuring programming is taking place and there are structured things taking place, but is a giant portion of ensuring that safety piece as well.
Well, thank you very much, and I've heard from many, many people in the community that they're really happy about it, and it is, like Councillor Anderson said, long overdue, and we're really happy with that.
Councilor Trail.
Thank you, and through the chair, I will echo the comments of my colleagues regarding that, you know, we're grateful for the work you do. I just have a quick few questions. How do you find balancing the Curtis facility with running the Bowmanville one as well?
How do you find what?
Like balancing, you dividing your time between Bowmanville and Curtis now that you do have the two running.
Well, it's been an interesting adventure. No, it's been great, and I mean, I think the most exciting part for me is that, I mean, now we get to not only bring on some amazing staff who can do some great things at both locations, but is to even see kind of the differences in the needs between the populations and things like that. So, I mean, it's been working out really well so far, and again, we just kind of hope that continues.
Okay, so through the chair, there hasn't been a cutback of any hours for Bowmanville or anything as a result of the additional facility?
Nope, absolutely not. So Bowmanville is still operating at the exact same hours and things like that we've had the option of for the past several years. There have been a couple of specific programs that haven't launched kind of as early as they have because of that, because of the three locations, but specific to what we've always been offering in Bowmanville as far as the drop-in services, the programs, those are all exactly the same.
Okay, and just a quick question through the chair as well. Do you do fundraising on your own outside of what the municipality provides and through John Howard?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. So that's, again, how we make ends meet at the end of the day, I guess, is as far as our fundraising. So that's, again, a big component of what allows us to not reduce those hours, but also to continue to offer all of these great programming opportunities at no cost to the youth coming through the doors of any of the locations.
Okay, because through the chair, I only asked just because I'm very active on social media and I often see the fundraising drives that are being put forward by other organizations like Big Brothers or that kind of thing, and I don't ever see anything being shared or saying bottle drive or upcoming event or anything for the youth center.
Okay.
So what kind of, what are some of the fundraising things they do? Like, I'm just curious because through the chair, hasn't been super visible, at least to me anyway, in the social media sphere.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, a great option to kind of put out there what's regularly going on throughout the course of the year. So we've got a kind of like few kind of like key marquee ones like most organizations would. So during Youth Week, we run an annual Battle of the Bands and Youth Showcase vocal competition. So that would be the first one that usually kicks off. We do an annual golf tournament every year as well. We have our annual Firehouse Fright Night Haunted House where we turn the building into a three-story haunted mansion. So those are kind of the three key ones that we would run throughout the course of the year. And then, I mean, usually we're lucky enough to partner with some other maybe local businesses and groups and things like that to maybe do community barbecues throughout the course of the summer and that kind of stuff as well.
Through the chair, I remember you mentioned too that you guys did some trips. Do you still do that? Like, I think it was Canada's Wonderland or that kind of thing. Is that still happening? And
yeah, so most of those, it's kind of cool because a lot of those have expanded as we continue to kind of, whether it's expand their presence on social media and more people just being aware of the location. So we've actually got a donated Oshawa Generals game box coming up in February, but all those summer trips and things like that, so Wonderland, paintballing, Coburg Beach, whatever the youth are interested in coming into that summer, those are all still taking place.
Okay, and then finally through the chair, other than money, are there any, like, could you describe what are the most critical needs that you're facing, either with respect to Curtis or more generally at all the locations? Like, what are some things that the youth centers really need right now and you'd like to see you'd like to see at the centers going forward?
I like how you cross money off right away, so that was good. At the core, what we have learned maybe more generally in opening these two new locations and the continued strength with our Bowmanville numbers is that these spaces are needed. And I feel like that investment, not just from a money standpoint, but from the standpoint of really embracing that these youth bring a lot of creative and really cool things that they can bring out in our community and providing them with a safe space to feel comfortable to maybe try something new that they've never done before and things like that is probably one of the most quintessential things. So I would say overall, kind of globally, is just having the spaces and continuing to make youth a priority in our community would probably be the biggest need from our standpoint. I mean, there's always things like equipment and opportunities to participate in different activities and those sorts of things. But at the end of the day, I think it's just that continued investment and showing that investment towards these young people that they are important and they do have a really important place in the Clarington community as a whole.
Thank you very much.
Do we have anything further? Gentlemen, thank you. Chris, this time last year, 12 months ago, did you have any idea that you would be running three youth centers as opposed to one?
The easy answer is no. Yeah.
The Firehouse Youth, it's been established for some time, but we heard from Councillor Trail the dialogue that you had about trips and whatnot. Do you see, and it's early days yet, but do you see that same kind of programming being extended both to Curtis and Newcastle, and you described earlier, or are the needs, you know, that is significantly different?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would, again, if stars align, then that would be the end goal, is to utilize what we've seen as a very successful model as far as some of that summer programming in Bowmanville at the Firehouse, extend it out to those other two locations. But I think it also provides us a really amazing opportunity not to even just look at them as individual locations as the Loft, the Firehouse, and Newcastle Youth Center, but to bring all of these young people together to participate in some of those, whether it's trips or bigger organized activities altogether.
Perfect. That's wonderful. So, Chris, you know you're doing a great job. Ian, always a pleasure to see you. Tyler, you did a fantastic job this morning. Thank you. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Tyler, can we get your last name for the records?
What's that?
Your last name for the record?
McMaster.
McMaster? MC?
Yes, MC.
Perfect, thank you. So the next delegation is Wendy Bracken. Councillor Neal, I wonder if you would take the chair for 2 minutes.
Morning, Ms. Bracken.
Good morning. Just trying to. Good morning. I was here a little while ago to talk to you about the exceedance for dioxins and furans at the incinerator, and since then, a lot has changed, and there's some. It's getting very, very serious for Clarington. Since I last was here, hang on a minute. Yeah, I don't know why, but the presentation was cued in the middle of my presentation, so got previous. So since then, there's been the Durham Regent Report 2019 Cal 3, and of course this raises many concerns and implications for Clarington. As you know, I sit on the WMAC committee, and I participate on the FWAC committee, and that report completely blindsided me. I was not expecting that Durham was going to be asking to pursue an amendment to go up to 160,000 tons per year and to commence an EA for an incinerator expansion to process 250,000 tons per year. This is a huge development. You recall that last time, last council meeting, the chair of the WMAC committee was here. He said that Durham wasn't going. To his knowledge, Durham wasn't doing anything about upsizing the incinerator, so even he was not aware. And that's the Waste Management Advisory Committee. So there's many, many problems. One of the key things is that this report is circumventing the key stakeholders. They're saying they want to initiate a long-term waste study, but they're predetermining the outcome of that study before it even starts and moving towards more incineration and a huge increase, 250,000 tons when it currently is 140,000 tons per year. They've had no consultation, like I said, with the committees that are associated with it, with the host community, Clarington, and other municipalities, with the public in general. In this report, and I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, but there's an important history of operations that are bypassed. It just makes a few very brief statements about the DYC in 2018 and states that there were no exceedances verified to be a result of their operations. But you know about the dioxinfurin exceedance and that it was a still day and that that's still an unresolved issue. And you've written, you're going to write to the ministry or have written to the ministry about it. There's an important environmental assessment history and health considerations omitted from this report. Health was not a signatory. It was not one of the departments signatory to that report that went to the Committee of the Whole at Regional Council at Durham Region. There's huge other issues not considered. Carbon tax considerations. The incinerator is a huge emitter of greenhouse gases. 140,000 tons of waste, 140,000 tons of greenhouse gases emitted every year. And there's huge capital investment and huge implications for taxpayers. 3 years of operation, and there is a long list of serious problems and unresolved issues. As you know, there's been major dioxinfurin exceedances. Looking back, when they did the acceptance testing, ASH requirements weren't met. Regions subsequently altered the contract to make it easier for Covanta. There's been numerous outages. Performance guarantees have not been met. Even last year, weren't met. They did not have enough availability to meet what they had guaranteed. There's been equipment issues, malfunctions, rising costs. There's also been carbon monoxide exceedances, ambient air exceedances, dioxins, furans, benzopyrene, and total suspended particulate. There's even been a soil exceedance for benzopyrene. There's unknown risk to human health because there's inadequate monitoring. And there's also been failure to meet monitoring requirements. And often, the monitoring's been unavailable, like during the commissioning period when they turned the ambient air monitors off for some of the greatest toxins. There's unresolved issues with the long-term sampling system for the EMISA, and that's a requirement in the ECA. They haven't met it. And of course, there's the unresolved issue with that ambient air dioxinfurin exceedance that I spoke to you about last time. The host community agreement that you have with the region needs to be reviewed in light of all of this, as well as the environmental compliance approval and the EA that was done originally. Durham committed to achieve operating levels significantly better than the emissions identified in that table, and the ECA is more stringent on some of those pollutants, but they committed to be below 60. And as you know, there's been major exceedances of that 60 level. Now, in section 4.3 of your host community agreement, any expansion, they shall apply for a new or amended certificate of approval if required by the province of Ontario. It is so important that Clarington starts discussing now with the ministry and asks for the protections needed for Clarington. Yes, Clarington agreed to be a willing host. It said it shall not oppose the development or operation of the energy from waste facility. But that does not mean you can't criticize it. It does not mean that you cannot ask for safeguards for your community and that you ask for the proper assessments and health risk determinations. In fact, you absolutely must do so. That's your responsibility to us. Their monitoring commitments, that there's the section of the HCA that gives that. And you note that they committed to a 3-year term commencing upon the commencement of operations for the ambient air. Given all of the exceedances, You must be pressing that that continues, that you support continuing ongoing ambient air monitoring. And you must let the ministry know that. As you know, just a reminder, the stack monitoring's inadequate. It only happens once or twice a year. Now, they've committed to a voluntary stack test for the last 3 years. That's made it twice a year. You need to ask that that continues, given the poor operations in the first 3 years. You really don't know what's happening the other 364 days. And there's certain monitoring that would be beneficial that's done in Europe and that, you know, was recommended in the Ontario Guideline A7, and that was continuous monitoring for particulate matter and continuous sampling of mercury, but the regions did not agree to that. If they upsize, you've got to be asking for that. So this was very early on, the acceptance testing. Remember, the legal limit was 60 for dioxins and furans. Those were the levels, 229 and 103. That initial dioxin furan exceedance event was never properly investigated. Operating conditions were changed then. They used more ammonia and other things, activated carbon to get those emissions down. But of course, that all just transfers to the ash. So they granted that acceptance certificate knowing there were issues, and then 5 months later, we had this shocker. While the continuous emissions monitoring that was supposed to be robust and protective showed everything was fine and nobody even knew there was a problem, it didn't even detect that the dioxin furans were at 818, legal limit 60. So how long, how many times has the incinerator exceeded dioxin furan limits? No one knows. The monitoring's just, you don't have it. You don't have that information. Your SEMS can't detect it. That incident proved that. And the stack tests are so infrequent, once or twice a year, and ambient air, very limited. The continuous, the ambient air, dioxins and furans done one day every 24 days. The other 23 days, you don't know. I've talked at length about the exceedance that happened. Still day, closest stations, monitoring station to the incinerator, highest reading, and then radiating out. And that's unresolved, and I'm pleased that you've asked the ministry to look at this again, come back with more answers. EMISA, you know, 3 years in, this is a condition of the environmental compliance approval, 7.3. And it's also associated with condition 12.2 of the EA. That was supposed to be operational from the commencement of operations, and the regions didn't even have it working when it started. They didn't even have it online. And 3 years in, we've got no answers. This is a device that's authorized in Europe, certified in Germany, in the UK, and what's the problem in Durham? We just don't know. You've got, in the same report that went to COW at the region, they also admit that they're expecting exceedances for sulfur dioxide and for nitrogen dioxide. That they would be knowing that there's going to be exceedances for ambient air and still asking you to almost double, still asking the region to almost double the size of the incinerator. That is stunning. Like, just take a step back. You know there's exceedances, and you're going to add on. And that's Durham. That's on Durham Region. Look at the totals. Our airshed is very burdened. It has a lot to do with St. Mary's. And that was the Clarington ambient air. That was the site in York Region. I mean, there's absolutely no comparison, the burden. And yet they still chose to site it where they did. Health Canada also, you know, you've got to review the ministry review of the EA because experts pointed to these problems. There was a reason, there are reasons why. You remember the regions asked for 140 or 400,000 tons per initially. Well, there's a reason why they were only granted 140, and even that was dicey. And that's because the airship was burdened and the incinerator, you know, has significant impact. Nitrogen oxides, look at, you know, what was stated by the expert at Health Canada, that predicted project-related nitrogen levels are predicted to increase approximately 2 times over baseline. And that was already showing that Curtis site is having some of the highest in Ontario. You can see the impact on the predicted maximum.
Ms. Bracken, if you wait a moment, Councillor Neal, moving a second by Councillor Trail. All in support, opposed, carried, thank you.
Thank you very much. So this is right out of the environmental assessment. This is the kind of thing that Clarington has to be reviewing. You look at the background concentrations, you look at the predicted statistical maximum concentration from the incinerator emissions, and that was at the 140,000 ton per year facility, so what it is right now. And then you look at the combined in the third column. The incinerator is a very significant contributor of many of these pollutants, and there's the proof. So I went to Cal and I asked them not to approve to commence the EA to, now it's more than double the capacity. Like right now, Durham Region has 110,000 tons going. They're asking for 250. It would almost double the incinerator emissions. And you know, you've got all these things. It just doesn't add up. Common sense dictates when you've got exceedances, when you've got operational issues, when you've got monitors that were supposed to be there from the beginning, the AMESA, still not working, you've got things you can't explain, you're not meeting performance guarantees, fix those things before you even think about adding on. And you've got to consult with the public. We went down the incinerator road. You know, maybe it's time to stop that and look at something else. Because remember, incineration means landfill too. And it's very
significant. Ms. Bracken, I need you to wrap up as soon as possible, please.
So I'm asking you, make sure Durham Region knows about your position about that unresolved issue with the dioxin-furan. Attend Regional Council January 30th. Get your staff to start reviewing EA and the ministry review. Communicate with the ministry. The region must be not granted amendment nor expansion without full health and environmental risk assessment of the impacts of any upsizing. And I thank you for allowing me that extra time.
Councillor Neal.
Thank you, through the chair, to Ms. Bracken. So you sit on both the ministry committee and the advisory committee, and no, when's the last time there was a meeting of either of those two committees that you sit on, please?
Well, there was a meeting for the FWAC committee that was mandated in the condition of approval. We had gone more than a year without a meeting, even though members had asked for a meeting. It was last December, okay, so December 2018. We were not told this was coming, and we had, I think it was like 1 day notice. It was absolutely ridiculous. And then the minutes for that meeting, for the previous meeting, because it had been so long ago, they weren't even provided at the meeting. So I feel like the region is not doing what they were mandated to do in that minister's condition of approval. With regarding the WMAC, I think the last meeting was in August. I can't remember the exact date. But again, we were not told this was coming or even that they were going to commence this. And you had our chair here at your very last meeting, and he said this wasn't coming. They hadn't even communicated to the chair of that committee that this was coming. So how can we advise when we're told after the fact this is the way we're going?
Okay. Now, I think you're pretty familiar with the wording of the, first of all, the environmental assessment from, I can't remember precisely what the year is, but, and also the host community agreement. So were there terms in the environmental assessment or the host community agreement that dealt with diversion rates by the region to try to increase that, or what?
Yes, there were. And the region had said that they'd meet 70% diversion by a certain date. And of course, the region has completely stagnated on that. They've not moved. It's 50-51. I haven't reviewed all those numbers. I believe there's another delegation that was going to speak to that. I've been focusing on the health, but you're correct in that.
And what's your position or view on the anaerobic digestion sort of proposal that's been out there for some time now? Do you think the region is moving that ahead, or what's your sense? And also, do you think that's, I've heard the quote that there's about a third of the what's being inputted into the incinerator is organic, so do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I do. I have been asking at the WMAC committee that the region really needs to consult with the public about this, and that it should have been happening, a long time ago. And, honestly, being on the WMAC committee, I feel like members are confused because we're never really sure exactly what the region is going to be proposing. And, it's going to be very expensive. You're going to have, I've got a number of concerns. It's going to be very expensive. And imagine your black garbage bags and, they're going to be processed. The residuals you're going to get out are going to be dirty. And there's a problem with that because more and more the markets for recyclables are asking for super clean. And if it's not super clean, they're not taking it. And they know the market's an issue. Little things that could make a huge difference aren't, and simple, low-cost things like clear plastic bag policy, like enforcement, that's been discussed at our committee. There's only two bylaw enforcers and we all know, the streets we live on, we can tell. You can just look down the street and tell who is not recycling. Because they've got the big garbage cans and the big bags, and their bins aren't very full. And can you imagine taking those simple measures first? And I really don't think the public has been fully involved, and the committee doesn't have a solid understanding of the scope of what the region is doing.
So just in terms of what it is that you're requesting, you're asking essentially that we communicate directly with the ministry on this? Is that essentially what you're asking?
I think basically,
and state our position about this, about what Durham Region has put forth.
Yes, and I think you have to gear up. So your staff is going to have to review all those things: the EA, the ministry review, what those expert reviewers said, cautioning about. There were predicted problems in the EA. You've got to be. Have a dialogue with the ministry that you're concerned about the impacts any upsizing will have on your residents, and what are they going to be doing about that to assess those impacts.
And you're aware through the chair that the request has been made to the staff at Durham Region to basically attend here and answer questions, some of the questions you're raising, is that? Yeah, are you aware of that?
Yes, that was...
Okay.
Yes.
All right, Mr. Chair, I will have a referral motion at the appropriate time. So.
Great. I think the referral, Ms. Gasser is speaking to the same issue, so we can probably deal with both in with the same motion. Councillor Hooper.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Bracken, for you and other delegates for your dedication to this cause. My one question that I do have, Councillor Neal took some of the other ones that I was going to ask too as well. And I know I've been to a couple meetings, I haven't been to a lot lately, and I see why, because they haven't had that many. I guess my question is, was this information given to you, you have an agenda before you go to your meetings, correct?
Correct.
Was this listed as an agenda item before you went to the meeting? So you could ask the questions, like I know you do ask a lot of questions and inquire of staff, so.
No, I did not know, and the committee did not know that the region was considering to to upsize the incinerator.
So Mr. Emilio, is that his name? Was he there from our staff at the region? Joseph? I can't remember his last name.
Oh, Mr. Anello?
Anello, sorry.
Yes. Just so I'm clear, may I ask, are you talking about the WMAC meeting? Is that?
Yeah, the one you said that they had it in December last year.
Oh, yes, he was at that one, and that was the Energy from Waste Advisory Committee. So that's the one that was mandated as a condition of approval, and that's the one where we'd gone for more than a year, which is, you know, outside of what the minister mandated, and where they didn't supply the minutes. But Mr. Anello was there. There was no discussion of this at that meeting, and there was no discussion of this at all at the last Energy from Waste Management Advisory Committee. So neither committee, I attend both. I was completely blindsided seeing this report.
So you really didn't have an opportunity to ask the important questions at that meeting?
No.
Because of, you know, didn't have...
We didn't know it was coming, and we didn't know that was being considered.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. Councillor Anderson.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for your presentation. I didn't know of the expansion until recently myself, but I'm no authority on the incinerator, but it was built for 160 tons, if I stand corrected. In my other life, I know I did get the frequency of testing back from the ministry increase. I don't know if that has gone back to the normal level. Is it 3 or 4 times per year they do the testing? I'm not sure. Another point.
So I need a question, Councillor.
Yeah, I'm getting to the question. So are you seeking a motion from this council to have the testing, make sure the testings are done more frequently and up to date? That's one of my questions.
Yeah, I think with everything that's coming, I think this you need to put, I don't know that you can do it actually today, but that you need to get staff to think about all these things. The ambient air monitoring, it was mandated for 3 years and that it's supposed to be reviewed by the region at the end of 3 years. Well, we're there. You should be thinking about how you want to formally request that continues on. That's essential. Because those stack tests, I think that's what you were referring to, 3 or 4 times a year. Yeah. It's once. They're only mandated once. They've gone to a second for the last 3 years. So maybe they're only going to do one now a year. So some of the pollutants of highest toxicity only tested once at the stack per year. The other 364 days, you don't know. So you need to be pressing. Keep at least 2 up. And, you know, you need to also be communicating with the ministry that EA approval was only for 140,000. They're asking for 160 and looking forward to 250 to commence the EA for 250. But the EA approval was only for 140. And there were, even at 140, there were many things experts from Health Canada and the ministry itself identified problems because the airshed was already burdened and because the incinerator emissions were going to also have a significant impact. And you even have evidence in the region's own report because they're telling you in that report they expect exceedances. Now, you just have to step back and think about that. That means the air down there is already so bad, they're expecting the exceedances, yet they're going, that's now. And then if you almost double the size, can you imagine the burden on the people? And that's what I'm asking you.